boggling over with!
Is there a conspiracy? Yes. Are we being manipulated and controlled and guided into a new world order and a new world religion? Yes. Is there a group in charge of this who's been in charge all along who are bringing this about? Yes. And I can tell you, folks, they're as old as man. They're the followers of an ancient religion that has persisted even unto this day.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show 9/11 16th Anniversary Special with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, author Ian Henshaw, and me, Tony Gosling. And joining us on the line, I'm hoping now, from the United States, is Chris Bolin. Hi, Chris, and welcome to the Politics Show. Can you hear me, Chris? Yeah, so it doesn't sound like we've got a very good link to Chris Bolin there, which is a pity. But maybe, Martin, you could help us out here a little bit, because Chris has made quite a lot of links between the Israelis and 9/11. And there's quite a lot of people around the world who are saying, well, actually, that's just anti-Semitic. You have to be a Nazi to say things like that.
Well, the fact is, were they connected to it, yes or no? And the answer is yes, and there's quite strong evidence. For example, the five dancing Israelis who were seen celebrating when the first plane hit the first tower, and they were seen and the on the top of a white van, and somebody noticed them and took the van's registration number, gave it to the police. 8 hours later, the van was stopped, they were arrested. And it turned out that they were Mossad agents, the people in the van, and that they were filming the attack. They were interrogated by the American authorities for several weeks, and eventually they got back to Israel and they went on television in Israel and said, yes, we were Mossad and we were filming the attack, but it was nothing suspicious. We were just documenting what was happening, documenting a supposed surprise attack on the United States of America. And that's one link to the potential involvement of Israel and the Mossad in 9/11.
Well, there's another one, isn't there? And that's that quite a lot of people involved in the subsequent cover-up and the investigation were dual US-Israeli citizens.
That's true. And you've got... if you think about we're talking about motive before the break, there's two big motives here. The US military industrial complex needs enemies because they need money, and the Israelis have got a plan to balkanize the Middle East, the Yinon plan, and they need the Americans and the British as well as junior partners to help them dominate the Middle East. So we've got a fairly straightforward explanation.
Shortly before 9/11, Israel was an absolute low point in its global popularity. Colin Powell walked out, the American Secretary of State walked out of a UN meeting in protest against the fact that they wouldn't buy the sort of support for Israel any longer. 3 months later, after 9/11, it was game, set and match to Israel politically. They were sending experts around, so-called experts around, helping practically every government in the world deal with terrorism. They went from the bad guys to the good guys overnight. Huge benefits for them.
Also, the Israelis are very, very keen on sort of high-tech stuff, aren't they? Particularly
they are.
Software.
I mean, and in actual fact, all of the airports where the planes took off from on 9/11 were... most people may not realise this, but there's a huge private security industry out there that runs airports, but it's not actually controlled by the governments of the countries concerned where the airports are. So ICCS is an Israeli-based security company closely linked to the Mossad, although it's a private company, and they control all three airports on 9/11 in terms of getting people on and off the planes, and they also control Schiphol Airport, where the underpants bomber was let onto the plane without going through security, because we got eyewitnesses saying that, and the shoe bomber also, Richard Wright or whatever his name
Richard
was.
Reed.
Richard Reed got on at Schiphol. Don't forget that this war on terror is a huge boondoggle for private security companies. And who's the experts on trying to stop terrorism in the whole world? Oh, it's the Israelis. So they then get the contracts. But of course, if they are actually perpetrators than being in charge of security in airports. I mean, you'd think if you're a terrorist, why would you want to attack an airport? Well, it's full of security.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Chris Bolin, when he tried to come to speak on Ken O'Keefe's show on the David Icke channel, something called The People's Voice, which ran for a while until there was they ran out of money and there were various factional infighting going on there. This is back in January 2014. Chris Bolin was stopped at the airport and told that he wouldn't be allowed to enter the country because there was some sort of outstanding warrant for him in the United States, so he was sent back home. He wasn't allowed to come on that program. But it almost seems like this whole security industry, they seem to be working hand in hand, and to actually stop him coming into the UK to go on the TV, of course that doesn't stop him talking on Skype, although he hasn't been able to talk on Skype today with us, unfortunately, when we're in the new studio. The first time we've used Skype in here, so there may be some other problem with it. But this whole private security industry, and it's not just private security, it's also the private arms industry and private military companies have absolutely exploded as part of this war on terror. In fact, many of these troops, the Americans a couple of weeks ago said they're sending 4,000 new troops to Afghanistan, many of those will be effectively mercenaries.
That's right.
I've got to say that I've got a slightly different model of this. I would see whoever carried out the 9/11 attacks or, you know, planned it as being a criminal conspiracy. I think that's really the best way politically to go forward on this. We've just been infiltrated by a team of criminals who've unfortunately managed to bully
you. But do you not buy this sort of geopolitical angle of the disruption of the Middle East?
What's happened over
such a long time.
I think that what we're talking about is a fairly small number of people who probably go to your Bilderberg group, you know, maybe the plot was hatched there, but in a country, a state or a golf course, I don't know. But we're talking about a small number of people who orchestrated this, and we've got our suspects list. But what you find, actually, interestingly, is that there's like almost like one person from each agency. You've got the Israelis, you can find links there, you can find links with the Pakistani intelligence, you can find links with the CIA, a lot of links with the CIA, with the Saudis. So what I think we're really looking at is a network, a sort of mafia-type network, and in just the same way as drugs networks have their man in the police tipping them off, this network has its... They want somebody everywhere important. And I don't think really the upper level of global power is nation-based. I think it's network-based. And these are what people known as the neocons. I mean, that's the whole point about the neocons. They could be Israeli, they could be British, they could be Washington people. So, yes, Israel hugely benefited and undoubtedly will have helped, but you know, and had probably had prior knowledge. But does that mean they organised it entirely themselves? I couldn't say that.
Martin, what about the bigger talking about geopolitics? Is the links? If you look at these big power blocks around the world, one of the effects of the war on terror has been it's been very much more difficult for countries to be independent under this kind of new global war on terror. We found many Eastern European countries, for example, the coup in the Ukraine. Countries are just simply not allowed to be halfway between East and West. They have to make a decision. We're now settling out into effectively three main power blocks. I don't know if you could critique, I may be wrong here, but it looks to me like the Western Europe and the United States as one, you've got China as another, with the Russians as another, kind of sandwiched in the middle, and pretty much everybody is got an alliance with one or the other of those three major groups.
Yeah, and the Russians and the Chinese are being pushed together by the belligerent attitude of the Western neoconservatives in power. I think, to comment on what Ian's just saying, I think, yes, it's clearly a criminal network, and that's a very important political thing to get hold of, because, of course, Imposimato, who's the head of the Italian Supreme Court, is basically saying, look, we've just got to arrest these people and put them on trial. And that's what we want. We want the people who did this, we want them arrested and we want them put on trial.
And we want a very thorough investigation into the ancillary people
that's
who
right.
gave them...
That's
aid
right.
and comfort after this, and I'm afraid to say that's a lot of people in the mainstream media.
Well, that's right, but I mean, all of that's got to be dealt with, and but of course, ultimately, warfare is warfare. I'm pretty convinced that the Chinese and the Russians are know virtually everything we know about this. Don't forget, they've got far more resources to find this stuff out than we have as independent investigators, and they are trying to negotiate with the criminals that run the Western powers, and they're trying to sort of box them into a corner where they're made to back down without a full-scale war. But the danger of full-scale war is definitely there. I mean, we could be at war with Korea this week. That's how dangerous this situation
is. There's an interesting parallel with the Watergate scandal, where President Nixon, Republican president, was deposed and or forced to resign, and most people took it that he was forced there by the left, who objected to his the war in Vietnam. But what the Russians said, interestingly, was that he was actually being removed because he'd sought détente with the Russians, which he had done. There's no debate about that. And they thought the motive actually came from the right. And when Deep Throat was finally identified, the informant was... I mean, he was always convicted on the basis of CIA-released tape recordings. That's what nailed Nixon, the Watergate tapes. But later, you know, it turned out that it was the Deep Throat actually was a guy on the right in the FBI. He thought Nixon wasn't conservative enough. So, you know, that shows how the Russians... And now, I think, with hindsight, we'd probably mostly think that the Russian version's quite likely to be true. So, yeah, you know, they're pretty well... They shouldn't be taken... they shouldn't be laughed at, that's for sure.
One of the things that I noticed you did with your 9/11 network was you let them know that this show was going on, Ian. And one of the questions that came back from one of your people as part of the Reinvestigate 9/11 group, Pat Bernstein, or Bernstein, I'd probably mispronounce it there, is what he's saying is, or she's saying, I'm not sure whether Pat is a man or a woman, how do you open people's minds to the possibility? There's so much complex evidence that needs to be presented. What simple non-technical points can be used to open the eyes of those who've got no concept of what happened on 9/11? Actually, I'm going to ask you if you can sum up maybe three or four points. You first, Ian, and then you, Martin.
Well, I would mention Operation Northwoods. Most people decide first what they want to believe and then find... I'm sorry to say this, and then find the evidence to fit it. I mean, we all do to some extent.
Well, some would say the same about you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'd say we all do to some extent. So I think what you really need to challenge are people's blocks. You know, there's no point in hitting them with immense amounts of evidence. The block is...
Northwoods?
They wouldn't do it. Well, the answer to that's Operation Northwoods. They'd be sure to get caught. Well, the answer to that's compartmentalisation. There'd be some whistleblowers. The answer to that is there are whistleblowers. They just haven't been reported in the mainstream media. So I think those are the three. And then the anthrax attacks, which, you know, were blamed on Al-Qaeda, but actually turned out to come out
actually,
of the American...
One of the most interesting whistleblowers is this guy called Peter Ketchum, isn't he? Because he worked for the official investigators, the National Institute of Science and Technology.
Did Kevin Ryan as well. He's another very important whistleblower. Peter Ketchum has produced an extremely persuasive video. His detractors will say that he wasn't actually personally involved in the actual investigation, which I think is probably true, but he does have a great deal of knowledge of how NIST works, and he's explained effectively how NIST could have been nobbled, because a lot of people in the scientific world will tell you that NIST, which carried out these official investigations, is a totally respectable and trustworthy body, and most of the time they are quite trustworthy. But Peter Ketchum, as an insider in NIST, explains how they would have set up, and once again, of course, it's compartmentalization. They chose some hand-picked investigators and kept them away from everybody else, just what Dick Cheney did in the CIA to justify the Iraq war, and possibly also his modus operandi if it was Cheney who did the organizing for 9/11.
Jamie McPhail is also one on your list, mentions the anthrax attacks again.
Yeah.
And he says another aspect of this which hasn't really been looked at is the death of a guy called Bruce Ivins, and I'm not sure
Absolutely.
Who he is.
I mean, well, he was framed by... I think it's, you know, not an exaggeration to say that he was framed by the FBI. When they couldn't get away from the fact that the anthrax came out of the US military industrial complex, the next thing to do was to blame it on an individual rather than the conspiracy. So they found this poor guy, Bruce Ivins, bullied him into basically committing suicide. But interestingly, his colleagues are standing by him, and there's an immense amount of evidence that Bruce Ivins couldn't have done it, even if he'd wanted to. He just didn't have the right access to the anthrax laboratories. So, you know, but yeah, Jamie McPhail's absolutely right about that. It's a smoking gun, I think.
And he's saying that the scientists that actually work with Bruce say that there's absolutely no way that he could have done it.
Exactly.
That, of course, has not been reported by the BBC, which is why maybe you're quite right to be outside there banging on their door. After all, if we don't pay the BBC licence fee, we get put in jail.
Yeah.
Well, we can do.
Matt Campbell's not paying his. But
has he been jailed
Tony
yet?
Rook. No, you'd be surprised how they're unwilling to create martyrs by sending anybody to jail, actually, on the issue.
Another question that's come up here is from Larry Jarbo, and he's saying, what do you think is the best way to put pressure on TV stations, etc.? He's asking me as well. I mean, I would suggest one of the ways you can do it is simply by having personal contacts with journalists. But what seems to be happening right across the Western press, and I mean, this is a whole other subject maybe, but is that honest journalists seem to be being sacked, being gotten rid of when they start to approach this kind of subject and start to try and deal with it.
Oh yeah, I mean, the battlefield's littered with journalists who, I mean, James Whale, you know, is a very aggressive talk show host. I was on one of his shows on TalkSport a few years ago, and you know, he's struggled to, I believe he's struggled to find a home.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Dave Von Kleist, we heard from earlier, he used to be on the old GCN network, which the Alex Jones and InfoWars are still on there. And then there's also George Butler, a guy in Austin, Texas, that does a program called The Secret Truth. He was also on that syndicated GCN network. As soon as he started to, he actually did an interview with Miko Peled, who was the son of one of the Israeli generals who were being very critical of the Israeli-US policy in the Middle East. All of a sudden he's told, well, sorry, your show is just boring, we're going to have to get rid of it now. But anyway, moving on to...
Well, when David Ray Griffin, I mean, this was spectacular, actually, because finally CNN were prepared to broach this. It had come up on their entertainment section, and they were overwhelmed by 9/11 skepticism when they raised it, and then they went stone dead on it 3 days later, and the executives said they'd been ordered to stop talking about it. Well, then they had one of their controversial panelist type people, hosts, called David Ray Griffin in, and literally she was sacked that day. They literally stopped it at about 48 hours notice, and they just to stop David Ray Griffin getting onto mainstream TV. That's how nervous they are.
Well, it reminds me of Discovery Channel and Conspiracy of Silence, which was a film made by Tim Tate, who's a British a documentary producer, about paedophile rings in the United States and in Washington and the Republican Party, rather similar to our whole VI paedophile scandal. They actually paid $500,000 for the film, and then at the end of the day, they never showed it. But Martin, anyway, let's move on to Martin. What are your maybe three or four main points?
Okay. Well, we've covered one of them earlier, which is the WTC7 building. Most people don't realise that three buildings collapsed, and that building was not hit by a plane. It wasn't. There was no plane fire. So that's the first point. The second point I'd like to say, people, is this: where was the United States Air Force for several hours on that day? Well, they
had exercises, but
don't forget, in the Battle of Britain, when in the 1940s, it took, you know, what, 30 minutes for the RAF to get airborne?
Quite a lot less than that, about five minutes.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So where was the Air Force? And, of course, we've never been given a satisfactory explanation for that. We know what happened. They were given a stand-down order.
Those planes were flying around for an hour and three quarters, weren't they?
Yes, exactly. Now, that's so those two... And the third point, I think of the context. And I would just mention one word in terms of context... Gladio, GLADIO. You can just put it into any search engine and it will come up. And of course, there is overwhelming evidence put together by the Italian police force, by the Belgian police force, by Swiss academics, nobody really disputes this as a historian, that NATO intelligence services were involved in exactly this kind of false flag terrorism in the 40s, 50s and 60s in Western Europe, including the Brabant massacres in Belgium, where people in supermarkets were shot at random, and also bombing the Bologna railway station in 1980, the kidnap of Aldo Moro, the Prime Minister of Italy, all according to the Italian police force and 30 years of investigation carried out by NATO intelligence services.
Area. I mean, of course, Hitler's invasion of Poland was based on the allegation that Poland was invading Germany.
I was in Dresden last year, and there are still Germans who believe that. They still believe that Poland did invade. And actually, it was reported in the New York Times that Poland had invaded Germany.
Was it really?
Do you want to just talk about that incident, that Gleiwitz incident? Because they took Polish concentration camp victims, didn't they? People who were in concentration camps who were Polish, dressed them up in stolen Polish army uniforms, and then gave them lethal injections, and then photographed them, and those photographs went around the world.
Said that the Poles had attacked the German border post, and therefore they had to respond.
Now, that's amazingly enough, some actually survived the lethal injections as well. There were one or two that actually survived during the war and spoke briefly after the end of World War II.
Well, in actual fact, that's quite an interesting line of inquiry, because this kind of fascist psychological warfare technique, which is what we're really talking about now, psychological warfare in 1939 was pretty crude. Yeah. I mean, nobody really believed, apart from the German propaganda machine, that the Poles had invaded and attacked Germany.
Well, no, and we don't believe today, do we, that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction?
Well, no,
we had two million people didn't believe. They went out on the streets of London.
Well, that's right. But, of course, what actually happened at the end of World War II is a lot of the fascist intelligence personnel were recruited by the OSS, which became the CIA, and recruited into NATO. So Reinhard Gehlen, who used to head up the Gestapo in Eastern Europe and had loads of agents operating inside the Soviet Union, he became the head of the West German intelligence services. And if I was head of the KGB, that would be a pretty clear signal to me about what's going on here.
There's been a couple of scandals recently in Germany in the last 10 years, actually twice now. The German Bundesnachrichtendienst, BND, have been caught setting up fascist cells. And, you know, some of the key fascist extreme right-wing organisers in Germany are beyond any doubt, you know, basically agents of the BND. It's been admitted.
I mean, we could actually at this point bring in some of the stories over the last couple of months to do with fascists in Germany and in Britain, because we've had the arrest in Germany of this is, I think, just within the last week, of police who they say in Germany were fascists and were planning to assassinate left-wing leaders in Germany. We've also had the army lieutenant, Martin, I think we covered this story on this show, didn't we? German who had left a false trail as a Syrian refugee and was planning to blow up a bomb in Vienna airport. More recently, we've also had, just over the last couple of weeks, arrests in Britain in the British Army by West Midlands police of what they believe are far-right extremists in a banned organisation here in Britain.
Well, also here in Britain, the bombings of Bologna, we mentioned Bologna railway station earlier, I did, in 1972, Dublin and Monaghan were bombed by loyalist terrorists in Ireland, killed 27 people, injured hundreds more. Simultaneous bombs in both Dublin and Monaghan in the rush hour as people were going home from work. And the Justice Henry Barron, who's the head of the Irish Supreme Court, has written a report called The Barron Report on this attack, which points the finger very, very firmly at British intelligence for being behind those bombings. Now, in other words, there is a track record of British, US, Israeli intelligence services. And they're not the only ones. This kind of false flag terrorism, you know, creating something shocking and outrageous so that you can then herd everybody like sheep in the direction you want them to go, is a tactic that's actually as old as warfare itself. But of course, modern psychological warfare is very, very sophisticated.
Okay,
I think the key point about 9/11 from the psychological warfare point of view is that it was such a big event, and so, you know, paradoxically, people will say, well, I don't think they'd do anything that big.
That's right.
But actually, it works much better if it's big. Look at Oklahoma,
Isn't this called audacity or chutzpah?
Chutzpah, I think, yeah.
Well, if it's a big enough lie, isn't it a big enough lie, you might be more likely to get away?
Because
it's more frightening to think that they're doing this on that scale than that they would do it just on maybe a small scale, just to justify something.
Fascinating, I think that over the last few weeks we've seen these arrests of fascists within the system, within the police and within the army. German soldier arrested, planned false flag terror attack on Vienna airport. That refugees would take the blame. Neo-Nazi arrests. Four alleged members of National Action were arrested over terrorism. That's West Midlands Police. Commission preparation and instigation of acts of terror within the British Army.
Yeah, and you've got to remember that if you look at the history of Operation Gladio in Western Europe, the intelligence services were running all sorts of different kinds of terrorism. So they it was fascist operatives who'd actually bombed Bologna railway station, but it was the Red Brigades who'd supposedly kidnapped Aldo Moro, the Prime Minister, although in fact both organisations, the fascists and the Red Brigades, were being manipulated by Caesar.
Now, in the attacks that happened here in Britain before the general election, many of the people had been reported to the anti-terror hotline. It seems here that actually the police themselves, the ordinary West Midlands police, we're not talking about MI5 here, are a bit of a different quantity to the Secret Services.
Well, the West Midlands police put a Swedish national on trial at the Old Bailey a couple of years ago now, because he was about to go off to Syria to join ISIS. And his defence lawyers argued perfectly successfully that in actual fact he was working with MI6, and MI6 were working with the groups that he was going to join, and so he was released. So in other words, there's a tension there between policing and the intelligence services. And if there are any police officers listening to this show, I would suggest to them that it's your job. Your job as the independent police force...
Or firefighters.
Well, firefighters can't go around arresting people.
No.
In Colombia a few years ago, there was something called Operation Dragon, which was orchestrated by the military high command, and they planned to assassinate all the trade union leaders, the main trade union leaders in Colombia, over a two-week period. And just before they were about to do that, the Colombian National Police raided army headquarters and took away loads of information.
Okay, I'll put a link
and therefore thwarted it.
I'll put a link up to this most recent story about the British police arresting far-right British Army people, allegedly anyway, during a trip to the Buchenwald concentration camp in Germany last year. Masked members of this banned group displayed their flag and performed Hitler salutes in what they called an execution room. National Action describes itself as a National Socialist youth organisation, was known for using the phrases "Hitler was right" and "Britain is ours, the rest must go" at marches and online. It used social media to call for a white jihad.
Yeah, but what may be happening here is both the jihadis and the fascists are in fact straw organisations which are being manipulated by the intelligence services. There's plenty of nutty people out there.
I thought it was rather odd the way that... What was that UK group called recently, you know, that was disbanded and collapsed? And it turned out that the guy running it, who'd been interviewed on Newsnight, they got a lot of help from Newsnight. They came from nowhere. Newsnight selected them out of nowhere. And then the guy turned out to be a militant Zionist, and resigned. He was sort of exposed because, you know, obviously he wasn't pretending to be that.
Well, something called the Quilliam Foundation I found fascinating, which Tommy Robinson, former founder of the EDL, joined. This is a sort of almost a fake Islamic pressure group, Martin.
Yeah,
saying,
but
there is a reasonable side to Islam, and it's us. Yeah, but the BBC put these people
You've got to think about the way the intelligence services operate. So they've got extreme right wingers to frighten the Muslims and the liberals. They've got extreme Muslims on the payroll to frighten to frighten everybody else. And of course, they've also then got the moderates who are then going to say this is all wrong, and they're also on the payroll because we're actually in a completely manipulated reality. But one of the problems they've got in the modern era is the internet, because anybody who disputes anything we've said in the 2 hours of this programme can go away and immediately check it. Immediately. It's quite straightforward. You just have to get your phone out and you can do it. In the past, you couldn't do that. Could go on for ages and ages, and you'd have to go and to dig up the relevant documents would take forever.
I read an interesting quote in The Independent when I was doing my 9/11 research about Ireland. They spoke to somebody who had been a British Army informant, and he said the attitude was, if there's anything happening, we want to own it. You know, that was the phrase.
That's right.
They wanted to own everything. And I think that's what you're saying, really. Miles,
okay.
Divide and rule.
One of the things I'd like to do is go back to one of the people who's made a big difference, as far as I can see, in explaining this to people who managed to find the time to go online and look at these things. Is this guy called Webster Tarpley? His "How to Stop World War III" talk, I think, was around about the same time, around about 2003-2004. Here's a little extract from it, because he explains that if you have a quite close look at the 9/11 attacks, very much like the JFK assassination, you'll find the person that they're saying did it can't possibly have done it.
Can Lee Harvey Oswald, using the Mannlicher Kakano 1917 rifle, successfully fire the requisite number of shots with bolt action in the time that he has? No. And it doesn't depend on his criminal intent. He can have all the criminal intent in the world. It won't let him do it. And these guys, you can say, oh, they hate us. Oh, they hate us. Doesn't matter how much they hate you. They can't do it. Okay, so this is a whole world of provocateurs, double agents. This is sort of the wormy underside of FBI, CIA, NSA, the rest of them.
And what Webster Talby's saying here is that they didn't have enough flying training.
Network. This is important. They don't follow the chain of command, even. They're not certainly not loyal to a constitution, but they're rather loyal to a clique. It's ultimately in Wall Street, but it's also senior government officials, generals, and people like this. Those are the moles. They also have to organize the cover-up. The moles have to make sure that nobody interferes with the patsies before the fact. Not because the patsies are going to carry out the attack, but because if the patsies are already in jail, you can't blame the crime on the patsies. So they've got to stay free, and then they've got to be arrested immediately, and you've then got to have a cover-up. And then you have professional killers. There's got to be a role in this for, I believe, a privatized command center. There's got to be a role for assassins, in other words, people like the people who really killed Kennedy, coming into town, getting out of town. Patsies love attention. They love to get on TV. Again, Oswald gets on TV, gets on the radio, gets noticed. Atta, same thing, right? Always fighting with people, abrasive. Then the professional killers, who don't say anything. They come in, shoot, leave. They're not ideologues in the same sense. They're not interested in popping off in public. A privatized command center, certainly not Dick Cheney. Can you imagine you're going to have this whole operation, you're going to make it depend on a guy who's 4 heart attacks and 3 pacemakers, sitting there with his wife who keeps turning the CNN up so you can't hear the interagency task force talking? And the whole thing doesn't work without the brainwashed world of the controlled corporate media. Okay? And that's state-sponsored false flag terrorism, because the thing says we're Al-Qaeda, and they're not Al-Qaeda. They're a branch of CIA and MI6.
Well, Webster Tarpley, of course, is a very senior academic. He's got loads and loads of degrees.
But he's also, he cut his teeth over in Italy, didn't he?
He was in Italy during the 70s, during the Gladio era. That's quite correct. And, of course, those who don't understand history don't really understand what's going on. And
you did a talk, didn't you? Well, gosh, must be around about 2005 or so, which we called False Flag Fever, where you talked about 9/11, but you never actually mentioned the 9/11 attacks at all.
That's right, because there's plenty of other evidence that this sort of thing goes on. So before you come to 9/11 and go, they wouldn't do something like that, you've got to take into account all the things that I've been stressing. The Bologna bombing, the bombings in Dublin and Monaghan in 1972, the Brabant massacres in Belgium in the 1980s. All of this stuff has been investigated and proven. But of course, nobody's ever put on trial. Nobody ever goes to prison apart from small fry, and so on. And we don't have a state of laws. We have got effectively a fascist dictatorship, but with a democratic facade.
Well, and I'm running under a state of emergency.
That's right. And France is currently under a state of emergency after the Charlie Hebdo. So permanent states of emergency. That is the goal here.
There's a huge
gulag of people where the habeas corpus and Magna Carta is out of the window, and hundreds of people are being held in these secret prisons which we're not even allowed to know where they are or what goes on in those prisons.
Isn't that exactly what these Islamists were supposed to want? That they hate our freedoms, they want us to take them up, to take our freedoms
away?
Well,
it's worse than that, because, I mean, the mainstream left, as it were, say, well, the Muslims are getting fed up because they're being attacked and bullied. And in one sense, they're right. But in actual fact, the most extreme Sunni jihadists are trained by our people. Saudi Arabia is our ally. British military personnel are currently in Saudi Arabia helping them target Houthi rebels inside Yemen.
Well,
in other words, we are complicit in everything that the Saudis do, and the Saudis are the heartland of Wahhabi extremism. If we were going to go anywhere to invade after 9/11, that surely should have been the place.
Martin, are the Saudis actually allied with the Israelis?
Yes, they are. The Israelis and the Saudis are allied. I mean, in Syria, they are on the same side. That's exactly what's been going on for a long time.
And but of course, it was raised, actually, in the media. It actually came out in the sort of gossipy parts of the political media that they were sort of quasi-publicly admitting this.
Yes, it's pretty much well known to everybody. But of course, out there in the sort of normal society, but surely the Saudis hate the Israelis and the Israelis hate the Saudis. You say, no, they don't. And in actual fact, when there was attempted to remove Prince Salman recently, the Israelis sent aircraft to Saudi Arabia to support him. And of course, they may use Saudi Arabia as a base to attack Iran.
Well, they're already talking about potentially getting involved in Syria, aren't they? The Israelis just the last week.
Well, they did it. They carried out a bombing raid yesterday. What they claimed was a chemical weapons factory, but of course the Syrians deny that. I mean, on what basis are they allowed to do that? Well, they're not really supposed to do that at all. The war's already raging. People are dying.
One of the more
day.
Interesting. I mean, I spoke to writer Soraya Sepafor Ulrich a couple of years ago, and she pointed out that many of these security companies are actually owned by Israeli companies and Israeli firms.
Well, that's why I mentioned that earlier. The whole privatisation of security, the Israelis present themselves, say, "Oh, we're the experts on fighting Islamist terrorism, so you need us." So they end up running ICTS, running the various airports, and of course Verint Systems, which is another Israeli-linked Mossad-linked company. They control the CCTV on the London Underground.
Well, anyway, let's go over to the United States and have a reminder now of what Soraya Sepafor Ulrich had to say to me a couple of years ago.
Israel conducts U.S. foreign policy. I mean, the most prominent scholars have said that Israeli, like Mearsheimer and Walt, they've said that Israel shapes U.S. foreign policy. You only have to look at the Israeli lobby groups, AIPAC being the most powerful, but then AIPAC is the muscle. It doesn't formulate ideas. It's all the pro-Israeli think tanks in the United States that come up with these policy papers, and then they're implemented by whichever administration happens to be in office. And AIPAC is the muscle, and, you know, says, you know, you have to do this, and we'll buy you, or we don't buy you. But also another thing that's very frightening, I think, about the United States, and very few people even give it a second thought, is all the security in the United States is run by Israeli governments, including FBI, including water treatment plants, including the nuclear sites, including the airports. And the danger of having Israeli firms in charge of all these securities is just beyond anybody's imagination. So even if AIPAC were to pull back and say, okay, I'm a foreign agent, I won't interfere, there is still this problem with the security of the United States being in the hands of Israeli firms. And so Israel's power over America is not just in the fact that they can buy politicians. It's a lot more complex than that, and a lot more threatening to the country.
Empire, aren't we? And I mean, I think you could have made, you might have made this case for South Africa. You know, people would have said, well, South Africa is controlling Britain, you know, before, you know, the collapse of apartheid, when we were supporting the apartheid state in South Africa. But I think the way the empire works is that they have a sort of lead country for each part of the globe, and Israel's the lead country for the Middle East.
But how do you explain all these links from Israeli software companies and security companies?
Well, the whole thing, lots of things. There's millions of links. Everybody's linked to everybody else. It's quite easy to find links. I think she's slightly exaggerated there, to be honest.
Well, she's saying that the security companies that are in charge of major sites often the Israelis win those contracts.
I would agree with that, but I think she said something a little bit more than that, a little bit more.
Well, she's also saying that she's also saying that the Israelis, to a large extent, control much of the U.S. foreign policy. Martin, what do you think?
Well, what about Ukraine? I mean, that we've had fascists. We put fascists into power in Ukraine. I don't think Israel was terribly happy about that.
No, that's not true. Kolomoisky in Ukraine is a very interesting character. He's Jewish, and he's an oligarch. And he's aligned with Svoboda, which are the fascists. So in actual fact, and of course we've covered on other shows that we've done, Tony, the links between Martin Bormann, who probably escaped from Berlin with British help at the end of the war, and when he set up his front organisations in Latin America, he made very sure to have lots and lots of Jewish people involved. So the idea that Jews can't be fascists, I'm afraid, is just wrong.
Oh, totally.
Right wingers hate.
Einstein himself Einstein himself compared the Zionists to fascists. He turned down the offer of becoming president of Israel. But let's be clear here, there's a few different things. We don't want to mix them up. There's Jewish people, there's Israel, there's Zionists, there's anti-Zionists. You can have any combination of that. So I think, you know, when we say Israel, we need to be just a little bit careful about exactly what
we are talking about. The state of Israel.
Let's remember one more.
The state.
Let's remember one more thing about. Sorry, I've lost my thread there. I'll come back to it.
Okay. I'd also like to talk, because I did speak a couple of weeks ago to a guy called Manfred Petrisch. He runs a blog in German language called All Smoke and Mirrors. He's a former Swiss banker, and also he was born to a German family in Argentina just after World War II. I think I'll leave it at that. He's now moved to the Black Sea, to Abkhazia. He's had enough of the West, and he has, I think, quite an interesting take on how the police state has started to, because we're starting to touch on some of those elements there, and the way civil liberties have been being destroyed since the September 11th attacks. And this is really, I mean, he just wasn't born in Germany, but this is really a German point of view.
Every time there is a terror attack, they want to have more competence regarding watching us and listening to us and destroying all the freedoms and the constitutional rights. And every time, and then when they have more competence, still there is a terror attack, and then they ask for more. So what is happening is, in the last 16 years, they have asked for more and more and more police power to invade your home, to listen to what you're doing, to store all your communications on the internet and the telephone and the mobile phone and all these things. And still there are terror attacks happening, which means that it's not about fighting terrorism. It never was. This is just an excuse for the stupid people.
Yeah.
It's what Orwell wrote in his book, 1984. It is the complete controlled state, the Big Brother watching you. He predicted it all, and we have it all now. And we have even more than he predicted. It's all heading into the so-called world government, which means that there is only one European government in the form of EU. That's a step in between to the big union, which will be a world government. That's what they want to achieve. They want to have just one government that controls everything, world domination. It has always been, if you go back thousands of years, it has always been the aim of emperors and kings and dictators and whatever to control the whole world. That's always been their aim.
I think it was a James Bond film, Dr. No, wasn't it, where James Bond himself says, oh, world domination, the same old dream.
Exactly. And that's what they are trying to achieve through different means, by doing all this North American Union and European Union and Asian Union and African Union. In the end, what they do, they join all these unions together and they will have the World Union. There has been a huge concentration of corporations. They have become monsters. They have become so big that they are bigger than countries. I mean, if you look at the balance sheet of these big corporations, they're bigger than the budget of many countries. They are above countries, and that's why they introduce globalism. Globalism only helps the huge world corporations, because then they can install their factories where they have the cheapest labor, they can install their headquarters in the place where they have the lowest tax, they can install their research department in that country which has the most lax environment laws. So they are the profiters of the globalism. You and I, we don't profit, and also the middle and small business don't profit from globalism. Only the big corporations. And they dictate all the laws to the governments. And this is, you can see this in the EU. The EU was only formed so that the big corporations can sell all their stuff into one big market of 500 million people. That's why it was created. Because then before, they had to have abide by the French law and the German law and the Italian law and the British law, and they had to do all these different changes. So what they said is, hey, we are sick and tired of this. Let's get rid of all this stuff and just have one big union, and then we can just sell the same stuff to everybody.
Okay, but how do we stop this globalism, assuming that this is a kind of totalitarian system that's gathering force here? Is there any way to stop it?
Well, you did it with Brexit. And that was the biggest kick in the groin for the globalists that anybody ever did. That's why I congratulate the British people that they voted for the Brexit. This is great. You see, what has to happen is all the countries have to regain their sovereignty. They have to regain control over their borders, regain control over their financial system, regain control about all the laws, and not be dictated from an unelected apparatchik in Brussels who dictates what you have to do. I mean, these people in Brussels, nobody has ever elected anybody of those. You cannot elect the head of the European Commission. You cannot elect the president of the Commission. You cannot select any of the Commission members. So, well, where is there democracy in the EU? There is none. This is actually a copy of the Soviet Union, of the UdSSR. The EU is a copy of that.
Well, that's one view anyway. That's Manfred Petrich from All Smoke and Mirrors, and he's really saying there effectively, Martin, that the 9/11 attacks are part of a wider attempt at globalism and world domination. Is that too far-fetched?
No, it's not. But you've got to remember that, in actual fact, the Russians and the Chinese aren't in on this game, which is why they're being forced.
Well, one of the things he said, which I haven't put on here tonight, is that the only reason we're not in World War III now is because of Putin.
Well, the Russians and the Russians have managed to rebuild their state as a democratic state, relatively speaking, and their armed forces. When I used to go over there in the 1990s, the place was in freefall. Absolute freefall. And of course, Putin, when he first came to power, through false flag terrorism, possibly, is a big topic that we could go into there about the bombs in Moscow and Ryazan. But he's double-crossed his backers, and he's trying to build up a Russian power which is not controlled by international corporations. So, for example, they've still got a nationalized railway, nationalized oil industry, etc., all of which has got to go as far as Western corporations are concerned. But they are not able to have everything their way. The idea that they are completely in control and that they're manipulating everything.
Oh, no,
they are very evil.
Definitely not.
But they don't necessarily. Warfare is a very, very risky business.
Sort of traditional empire in a way, and I think it's mainly centered on Washington. Washington and London, maybe
right.
Tel Aviv.
And Tel Aviv, yeah.
You know, and Brussels.
Anyway,
but
I thought we'd finish up with listening to Sybil Edmonds talking about ISIS, because this is one of the things that seems to have spun out of the 9/11 attacks and all the focus on the Middle East is the growth of ISIS. Since she's a former FBI translator, Turkish translator turned whistleblower. So anyone that thinks there aren't enough whistleblowers around, well, they have not been listening to this show, have they?
If I can speak for the people here in the United States, first of all, for them it's easy to digest, and most people here have been systematically stripped off of their critical thinking ability. They just want some sound bites from the mainstream media. They want sound bites from their TV news. I mean, it's really blurry, the difference between fiction-based sitcoms and what you watch on these types of news with, let's say, CBS or NBC. Mm-hmm. It's very, very blurry, and they work hand in hand, and they accept it. And then we have to admit, they have created, especially since 9/11, an entire industry, you know, from intelligence complex to military-industrial complex, as I said, contractors, subcontractors. You are looking at domestically, at least here in the United States, in trillions of dollars. And then if you start going outward and internationally in terms of gaining dominance in the region, and whether it's with Iraq and Syria and the Middle East, or what's going to come, and it has been at work in Central Asia. Ukraine kind of quieted down, but we actually got what we wanted to get out of that. Next, we are going to see, and that's my prediction, we are going to see some unrest in Georgia, because there are going to be these so-called terror events that are going to be blamed on some ferocious Chechen faction that may be collaborating with ISIS faction, and that's going to lead to Georgia's becoming formally, officially accepted into NATO as a member. We already have troops in Georgia. It's already on its way.
That was former FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds there. She's talked, Martin, about, for example, about a kind of almost a prison where ISIS is this thing you've just got to believe in and you can't get out of it.
Well, Rita Katz's website tells us all about ISIS, and of course she, what's it called? Searching for international terrorist entities. Yes, searching internet for terrorist entities. Most ISIS PR seems to come through her, even though she's definitely an ex-Israeli intelligence agent. In terms of what we can do to try and do anything about this, I think we've got to make demands of the police and the intelligence services. And we've said some pretty harsh things about the intelligence services here. They're not to be trusted. And when the police are investigating the events that we've seen, for example, recently in Britain, they should, one of the things that they should be bearing in mind is the role of the intelligence services in terrorist attacks. It's not crazy. It's perfectly straightforward, as Justice Henry Barron pointed out about the 1972 attacks in Dublin and Monaghan. The Garda Síochána investigated it, they looked into it, they pointed the finger at MI6. When Imposimato in the US, in Italy investigated what was going on there, he wrote a book, La Repubblica dei Stragi Impuni, The Republic of the Unpunished Massacres, that came out in 2012. The police have got to do their job.
Well, I'd also add the fire brigades, you know, because the fire people, they lost 300 people in 9/11, and there is a lot of debate going on in the fire brigades union now. So if you do know anybody who's a fireman, firefighter...
Anybody who knows a fireman, let them have a listen to the sound, the voices of the fire brigade in New York just before
Bravo
the buildings
7.
Came down.
There's a video being shown on Sunday, actually, about search Bravo 7 and you'll find it.
Absolutely shocking that they said, well, we pretty much put the fire out, and then all of a sudden a massive explosion and they're all died in a controlled demolition.
Yeah, they were halfway up. They were reporting that it was safe to go up, because it probably was before the demolition went
on. So anyway, your book is 9/11 the New Evidence.
9/11 the New Evidence, Ian Henshaw. Reinvestigate911.org is our website. What was Facebook? I'm not a huge believer in Facebook, but we do have a Facebook page.
Well, a lot of people, particularly young people, they don't watch television anymore. They're getting all their info from social media, so
yeah.
It's kind of, you know, we're almost in a straitjacket, aren't we?
But what you can do is to give people your email, give trusted people your email, because if I email you, it'll get through. If I put a Facebook post out, it probably won't. The picture of the head of the CIA unit who should have stopped 9/11, I put that on Facebook. It got 24 people looked at it, so-called. When I mentioned Chomsky, it goes to 1,000. Facebook is controlled. Obviously, it is controlled. So please don't trust Facebook. Use it by all means, but don't trust it.
Good tip. Thanks
very
much.
Go on an email list. Much more likely to get...
Finally, any thoughts about the next big 9/11, or even bigger this time, Martin? Any thoughts on that?
One of the things we're doing by investigating this way, we're trying to deter these criminals. If they do try anything else, we're going to be all over it, and they better know that.
Yeah, and the people around them are going to possibly make reports. They, you know, rather than not seeing what might be obvious with hindsight, now it's much more difficult for them because everybody knows about these so-called...
I mean, we're dealing effectively with a kind of failure in law enforcement in the West here,
aren't
we?
A massive failure.
Absolutely.
All through the doctrine of who watches the watchers. Because if you start suggesting that law enforcement should apply to politicians, they're going to start saying, oh, what about the Committee for Public Safety in the French Revolution? They demand the right to be in a crime-free zone. And
anyway,
we can't allow that.
Thanks very much to author of 9/11, The New Evidence, Ian Henshaw, and Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. 2 whole hours on the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, just coming up in a few days' time. This story shows story links and comment page is one word, thisweek.org. www.ukrepublic.org.uk. Well, I'll put links up to a lot of what we've been talking about tonight, most of the main stuff anyway. Is wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable BCFM weekend. I'll leave you with music from 1978 and Genesis. Do please join us for a politics show next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
FM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.